Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I am re-watching the series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, and so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. Hey, Kathy, how are you doing this week?
Hi, Jean. I'm doing great. 2019 is here, and I realize that dates this podcast, but I'm okay with that because this is going to be a great year. We're going to finish out the season.
Yes, we will.
Which means we're going to finish the series, and yeah, I don't know how I feel about that quite yet, but we still have a couple episodes to go.
Yes, we have. After the one that we do today, we will have exactly six. Plus, I think we will do a wrap-up episode unless we do a monster finale episode. But I think we should give ourselves a week after the finale and have our final thoughts. So that would be episode 51. But that is not today. Today we are on episode 4 of season 5, which is titled Let the Children and the Childbearers Toil. Again, this is from the poem Protest by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. And I find this particular line especially haunting. It comes from a phrase that goes, "Condemn the lawlessness of wealth-protecting laws that let the children and childbearers toil to purchase ease for idle millionaires."
Boom. I love that. So the sentence itself, that full bit is, you know, let's not build this wealth. Let's, you know, take the weight off of the children and the childbearers. And yet the way that they cut it for, like, the way that they quoted the section of the sentence is so ominous. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, let's let those children and childbearers toil. And I'm just, it just like gives me goosebumps.
Yes, right. The title itself, it is haunting in its own right. And, you know, spoiler alert, Ease for Idle Millionaires is the title of a future episode because they couldn't leave that one alone because it's so good.
Yeah. That's a really good wordplay.
Yeah. So, so I think we should just dive right into it. Episode 4 begins in revival, not the camp, but the home of P.T. Westmoreland, who is talking to Susan Duncan, Rachel's mother, who is apparently stab-proof, and she's recovering from the terrible treatment that she received at the hands of her daughter. And PT is there with her to let her know that he saved her for a reason. She says, "You turned my daughter against me. And I'm not dead, but why?" And he says, "Well, I need you." And that's pretty much that's not the opening, because before the credits start, there's another scene at Revival that really set me on edge because it involved animals. And I worried Charlotte, the junior clone, and Aisha, the girl from Afghanistan who's getting treatment at Revival, are talking to all the pigs in the pig pen at the livestock area of Revival, and they're missing a pig, and its pig's name is Daisy. And they're two little girls, so of course, what do? They go looking for Daisy out in the woods, and they hear pigs squealing, and I'm thinking, no, this is going to be horrible. And it's pretty horrible. The pig is still alive, but it's been totally mauled. And bleeding like horribly. That's pretty bad for kids to see, or people in general. And Charlotte notices there's a tooth on the ground, and she brings it back. Well, she and Aisha are standing there, and then Mud shows up, who is like, "You have to get back to the village." And they were like, "But Daisy got away." And they're, you know, rushing them back to the village. And that's
And Mud is very adamant that they need to leave.
Yeah,
like she has that sense about her where she knows something that the girls don't, and it's not safe. They need to get out of here. They need to leave right now, for whatever reason. And
So then, boom, opening credits. And next thing you know, we're at Mrs. S's house, and Kira and Sarah are talking. Kira's trying to get ready for school, but of course Sarah's like, I want to know everything you're doing with Rachel.
Yes, she's still obsessing over Rachel.
Yeah.
And the fact that Kira still has to go to Rachel, and it's you can tell she's just having a really hard time with the whole thing.
Yeah.
For a good reason.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest.
Right. And, you know, Kira's trying to downplay it because, of course, this is Kira's first chance to act independently from her mother this way. And she's not willing to give that up so easily and come back to being the protected little child. She's like the independent, you know, human guinea pig, which, and I think, she mentions how Rachel's clipped her fingernails and taken blood and talks about science stuff. And then as Sarah's trying to give her a hug, Kira's like, ow, 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 you know, like something's wrong. And Sarah, you know, sort of pulls down her sleeve and finds she's got a big cut on her arm. And I was like, oh my God. I think my notes say, ow, ow. I think that's me. No, maybe Kira said that, but I was also like, it was making me feel very ouchy.
Yeah. And I knew she was going to, I mean, she pulls out the knife previously. And so we know that she's going to hurt. I didn't realize she was going to like do it on her arm. That feels like it's not the best, smartest place to put it.
Yeah.
Unless she was like thinking that that way it could be covered with her shirt type of a location. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I mean,
you know, she's a kid.
They made it seem like she was going to cut the mouse that she got as a, you know,
oh,
gift.
I didn't think that.
I thought that at the end. I mean, she's holding the mouse, and we know about the whole mice and their tails, you know, theme. And I thought, is she going to cut off the tail of this mouse? Is she going to experiment on her own
mouse?
Was
she holding the mouse? I thought she went and...
She was playing with the mouse, and then she put the mouse down and got a knife.
Okay.
So,
gotcha, yeah.
It was...
I thought she was going to cut herself.
Yeah.
Like, that's what...
I didn't catch that. I didn't... I'm glad she didn't cut the mouse, but I was very sorry that she cut herself. And
yeah,
as of course, Sarah jumps to the conclusion that Rachel is vivisecting her, which, you know, Kira sets her straight that she cut herself, so that she wanted to see how fast she could heal. And S is like, okay, I'm in charge now. Felix, you take Kira to school, you pick her up, take her home for a sleepover, and Sarah, you're coming with me, which Sarah definitely does not want to do.
Yeah, she especially doesn't want her daughter losing, like, she doesn't want to be separated from her again, and is having a very difficult, this whole thing is, she's just having a hard time handling it, and I feel awful for her, because she has been, historically, been the person in charge and making these decisions. And even when S was doing something, it was all not necessarily under the guidelines of Sarah, but Sarah was the main person in charge of the purpose. Mm-hmm. And S is coming in and taking that away from her for the protection of Kira and for the protection of that whole situation. And so we end up, you know, once again, they're separated, but for a very good reason. And Felix gets to have a sleepover with Kira. And S warns him that there's going to be a visitor, which, of course, understandably, he goes, what?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah. And I immediately thought, oh, it's going to be like Irish, you know, freedom fighters somehow.
Right. But, who's it going to be?
So S is given Felix marching orders. She's got Sarah marching orders to come with her. And she's also been giving the rabbit hole folks jobs. Like,
yes.
She's just like a jobs program. And she put Hell Wizard and Scotty in charge of digging up, you know, more about P.T. Westmoreland. And I love how Hell Wizard says, we've been antiquing.
Yes. Because, of course, when somebody's, you know, that old, any books that they've written or anything that they publish is going to be antique level.
Yes.
You can't just go down to a Barnes & Noble and get, you know, a 100-year-old book.
No, that's true. So they figured out, well, he was born in 1843. And then he disappeared on some, you know, so he was like a Royal Geographic Society level explorer, you know, definitely. We already saw that in a previous episode when PT was talking to Cosima about Darwin and, you know, that. So, you know, we're supposed to think of him in that generation of 19th century explorers. And but he disappeared in 1898. And S is saying there must be something more about him in the last 100 years. And I think that's also they figure out that he was surprise, surprise. He was very into eugenics. So
yes,
manipulating the genome to, you know, create designer people, or at least weeding out the undesirable people. So that was cute. And I just like how this whole episode, you know, it's bookended with PT and Susan and their quest of what they want to do for science in their evil scientist type way. But most of it is really about how Siobhan gets things moving to thwart them in their quest. And the best stuff is that coming up with, there's Sarah and S, they come into this fancy hotel, like lobby, and Sarah's still protesting that she really needs to be with Kira, but S is like, we're going for a drink, you and I. And and then follows like one of my favorite scenes of Orphan Black, where once Sarah realizes, like, she goes, you were casing the joint. And S says, so were you. And they're looking for a mark. And S has somebody in mind. So S has been getting some intel, and we don't know where she's getting it from. But there's somebody that she wants to find before, you know, PT and Susan are able to make use of this person. So apparently their ultimate goal is somebody in a psychiatric ward. So they find this psychiatrist who has an appointment at the psychiatric ward, who's sitting innocently at her table, and S and Sarah go into this like bratty daughter annoyed mother routine where
well, and they learn that this lady Elizabeth Perkins is her mm-hmm. name, we'll just put that out there, yeah. Has a daughter who's suing her,
yeah,
and so they're like, okay, we can totally latch onto this mother-daughter relationship, not just because it's real mm-hmm. and it's always easiest to pretend to be, you know, close to your true personality and all of that, mm-hmm. but being able to, that will intrigue her to want to like open up herself. And so Sarah plays the daughter who's pissed off at mom, which was, I'm sure, very difficult for her to do. In fact, it flowed so seamlessly that I was like, oh, wait, they're performing now.
Yes. So it took a moment, cool. You know, where, you know, so Siobhan had said something of like, we need to get her ID. And then they never said like, okay, so now you pretend to be mad at me.
Right.
Like, no, they just like Sarah was doing it such, as you say, like that it wasn't totally clear that she was following Siobhan's instructions or not.
Right. Which I thought was so cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was really just well done. And so they head over, and Sarah gets to throw a glass her drink mm-hmm. in Mrs. S's face, which I'm sure everyone enjoyed. There's something so iconic about a liquid in the face moment. Mm-hmm. Just like everyone, I'm sure, just had so much fun. And in doing so, distracts Perkins to pay attention to Mrs. S while Sarah reaches over, grabs the wallet, and leaves the room. Mm-hmm. So obviously they know what they're doing. I'm sure they've done this several times before.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question about whether they have, because it seems like something, you know, S isn't an outlaw mama, you know, like she seemed to be trying to keep Felix and Sarah out of a life of crime, but apparently at least, you know, they had a excellent ability with grifting.
Yeah. Well, and that makes me very curious, because you know that Sarah and Felix both know how to manipulate and manage mm-hmm. these things. And it does make you wonder where they learned it mm-hmm. And how they paid attention. So I wonder if, like, they were watching S do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And learned that way, even if she did not directly involve them.
Right, right. That makes sense. So, yeah, so that Sarah takes off, and Siobhan is just great at acting like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'll do with her, kind of.
Right.
And Elizabeth Perkins is like, oh, come sit down, you know, you're going to want another drink.
Yeah.
Like, perfect. And that gives Siobhan a chance to get to know her even better. And
to adopt her vocalizations and her
catchphrases.
Catchphrases and how her, like, syntax, because we learn that so she has this appointment but the person that she's meeting with, they've never met mm-hmm. in person. And so it doesn't have to be exact.
Right.
Which is nice, because I don't think that would work as well as expected.
No.
Unless they were clones,
which they're not.
Yeah. Right. It's so funny, because now anytime we're meeting anyone new that, like, is not revealed, I'm always like, is this another one?
Yeah.
Is this? Yeah. So they, you know, Sarah is in the bathroom pulling out the ID and getting that information and everything that she needs. And S and Perkins are just, like, commiserating over how rough it is to be a parent and really, like, getting data and information from Perkins mm-hmm. and also almost having a therapy session.
Yeah.
Because so Sarah comes to return the wallet mm-hmm. At the table, and then leaves just as Perkins is, like, trying to find her wallet to pay, and it manages to slide it behind the computer and, mm-hmm. you know, all these fancy little tricksy moves, and she leaves again. And as S leaves, like, Perkins is like, your daughter is struggling on the threshold of what it means to become you.
Yeah.
Which, like, was so on the nose and so real. And I thought that was just really poignant, that I'm sure S was just like, oh, yep.
Yeah.
That is accurate.
Yeah, that was a good line. I noted that as well. Obviously, this being Orphan Black, there's several jumping around scenes, but I think we should just stick with Sarah and S for a bit here.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of an intact story in its own. So now they're back in the car, and, you know, Sarah's wondering, like, who is feeding you all this information from inside Neolution? So S doesn't tell her, of course, but then Sarah says, I want us to make a stop. You know, there's a convent. And that's where Helena has been. So we knew that. We saw a brief scene of her at the convent in the last episode. So now Sarah is going there to see Helena, and S says, you know, go hang with your sister, and I will, I'll get ready.
Get ready. Yes.
I'll get ready for, so it's nice that the mental institution and the convent are conveniently located.
It's a nice, it seems to be a straight shot from the hotel bar mm-hmm. to the convent to the mental hospital.
Yeah.
Which so great.
Those three things, yeah, I could see them being close together, but the same convent where Helena is and the same mental institution where the person that S wants to get at. Is yes, that's a bit of a coincidence.
That's fine. I mean, granted, it was a couple hours. I think we mentioned something like 3 hours driving or something. So that's understandable. But yeah. It's fine.
So, So Sarah is being guided to Helena's room by a nun who doesn't answer her questions at all, doesn't speak to her, and just shows her into Helena's room, and Sarah says, "Oi, meathead." I love that.
Yeah.
And, Helena is happy to see her. Of course, she's like, "Oh, Danny Hendricks told you our secret." And mentions that, Sister Irina is the name of the nun, took, care of her when she was in the Ukrainian convent and tried to protect her. And for that, they take her tongue. So yep. She's actually been made mute.
But I love that not only are they at a convent that just so happens to be between the hotel and the mental hospital, mm-hmm. but it also happens to have the same nun that took care of Helena
when she was in the Ukraine, which is not on the way to the mental hospital.
No, very much not on the way. Very out of the way.
So, yeah, anyway, this is one of the most lovely Orphan Black scenes. Like, you want to say, Sestra, you make me cry. They were having such a great moment of just talking. Oh, and did I mention this in the last episode? This is the scene where there's the drawing that I won.
Yes.
Yes. So you get to see my drawing in the background throughout the scene. But I liked the scene even before that. It was so touching because it's a very calm moment between Helena and Sarah compared to many, if not
to most,
almost all of their moments.
Yeah.
Where Helena is clearly like pretty grounded, at peace, waiting for the babies and writing her memories. And neither one is trying to kill each other, as they mentioned.
Well, I there's definitely a certain and there's a certain amount of peace that happens as you get closer to the end of a pregnancy, mm-hmm. Where you're just really introspective and you're concentrating on yourself and like these humans that you're growing, and that's a whole bit. Mm-hmm. But also I feel like she has a sense of safety almost, mm-hmm. because she knows that Sestra Irina won't ever betray her. Like, right. She knows that this is a place that nobody else really knows about. She knows that Sarah won't let anything happen to him. And so on top of that, you have this woman who is very connected to children above and beyond, who is growing to humans in her mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And so I can see like just this whole overwhelming sense of peace that she's like reached in this moment, which is really cool.
Yeah, no, that's true. And the first time where Helena's just staying put.
Yeah, she's not trying to get additional food. She's not trying to escape. She's not trying to kill anybody or even be ready to go out and murder anybody.
No.
Like they're talking about Kira a little bit, mm-hmm. And the connection that Kira has with everyone. And this was the first time I I don't know if I heard or how, like, that the connection that Kira has with everyone, all of the clones also feel it. Mm-hmm. Like, they feel that flow of, I don't know, love, connection mm-hmm. from Kira to the clone. Mm-hmm. And that on the island was the first time that Sarah felt it from Kira, mm. Which I don't know if that is an accurate yeah. understanding of what was going on, but like that moment of tears and just like love almost, mm-hmm. that connection between the three of them was really sweet. And then, of course, they're talking about the babies and that the last shot of Sarah rubbing the tummy and Helena rubbing her hand too. And I'm just like, yep, I know how they did that, you know, shot. And that hand is very obviously the stand-in's hand on the other side of the body, and they just put the face of Helena on there. But I just, like, I didn't, like, recognize it as a scene so much as just acknowledging it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't pull me out of, oh, these are obviously a double, so much as
yeah,
I'm trying to be aware of those moments.
Yeah. No, that's, I just like how she says, miracle babies. Just yeah. like us. And it's like, oh, so that's really nice, because we haven't seen Helena in a little while, and we get to see her and see she's okay, like more than okay. And then Sarah gets back together with S, who has transformed herself into Dr. Perkins.
And yes. Like, in a beautiful way.
So cool. Like, tied her hair up in a bun and has these glasses on and a suit. And she's like, it's not rocket science, which is, you know, what Dr. Perkins said about this mother-daughter conundrum. And they were both practicing their accents because they, you know, Sarah's going to go in as pretending to be her assistant. And I thought when Sarah was doing the accent she was going to do for the assistant, she sounded most like Cosima, which seemed appropriate.
Yeah. I wonder if that's probably, you know, on purpose as Sarah, mm-hmm. like, would, again, you pull what you know, mm-hmm. and it's easier to pull from someone that she has spent time with and like that personality. And so it would be easier for her to go, okay, yes, yeah. I will be Cosima.
Now, the only thing they didn't try to disguise was their big, you know, pickup truck thing, which right. I don't think right. that's like Dr. Perkins would be driving that car, but whatever.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if they're just like, oh, well, we'll park it in the parking lot and nobody will notice or something. Who knows? Because I'm sure they don't have valet service at the mental hospital, so it's not as big of a concern.
Yeah. So they were, so they were welcomed into the facility, and S begins her con saying like, oh, I thought my appointment was tonight with Dr. What's-His-Name, and oh, no, it's in the books for tomorrow. And she's like, oh, and they start, like, she's like, oh, I don't know, we have this thing tomorrow. And in a long line of administrative help guys who fall for the Siobhan and Sarah show, this guy says, well, you could look around. You can't be, you know, no patient contact, though, until tomorrow. And so he gives them badges to go into this locked, secure facility.
Right.
I've got somebody you probably like to meet. His name is Raj. And mm-hmm. if you have not forgotten Raj from season one, who gave Sarah as Beth all the equipment and info and stuff, and really was likely to get himself in trouble.
Yes.
So, yeah, so they go, they swipe their badges, they get into this facility, and they're looking for somebody. Now, so I get to ask you now, because you've seen it, who did you think it was going to be that they were looking
this
for?
This is a point that I thought there was another clone.
Okay. Yes.
And even though rationally I was like, it can't be a clone because they would have had to hide Sarah's like look because that would be weird to people. But that's where my brain went. And other than that, I was clueless. And so when it's revealed that it's Cody, I was just like, what? What?
Yeah.
What? That was kind of my reactions.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, they show her kind of from behind and she has long dark hair. She, last time we saw her was in that cantina. She came after Sarah and Servan. So there was some, that's season three. There was foreshadowing that she was not killed by the hand grenade that Paul detonated, you know, and I was like, well, darn, you know, back then she should be dead. And, you know, just because Paul, you know, Paul gave his life for this. But yes. So that's.
Well, and to be honest, I had forgotten that we had seen her.
Yeah.
Between then. So we knew that she wasn't dead. Yeah. I had forgotten that. Well,
it was a very small scene and it was in season three. And
which was a long time ago.
Let's just say there's some characters that you think will show up again and they never do. So let's see. So she's it's Cody and she's completely drugged up and you know, and but Sarah recognizes her right away, and then she's like shoving her, going like, "You're faking it, you genocidal bitch!" And this is not helping. Siobhan is like, "Let's just like let's, you know, let's get, disconnect this line of, you know, whatever dope they were pumping her up with." They are trying, and she also brought like a shot of adrenaline or something.
Right. Yeah. She was well prepped.
Yes. Well, it's Siobhan and she's on a mission. So Cody does come, you know, to some semblance of, you know, consciousness. And she's like, oh, it's Sarah and her mom. How's Helena and the pregnancy? And Sarah, you know, Sarah slaps her like, you know, she obviously has a lot of pent up anger towards Cody. For a lot of good reasons. And this gets really interesting. Then I thought the story that, well, a couple of things about this scene. First of all, you know, so it's basically, it's Cody telling the backstory of PT and Susan, you know, and that the three of them worked together. And it's a voiceover while they're showing stuff back at PT's, you know, house of horrors. And I don't think they've ever done a voiceover like that in the whole show before. So basically a narration, you know, and, you know, giving us background information while showing us something else.
Yeah. Something that you think is going to have so much more to do with what it actually does. So I guess maybe we should hop back and do Cosima. Before this, a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's so put a pin in it. Stay at the mental institution with Sarah and Siobhan and Cody while we see what else is going on at the island of Dr. Westmoreland.
Yes.
So we know there was the pig thing with Charlotte and Aisha, and then we see Cosima doing some tests on Charlotte, you know, like checking her health and saying like, oh, you're getting better. And I just bring this up because it was so amusing. When Charlotte shows her the tooth, she says like, there's an ogre in the woods. Yes. And Cosima's like, oh, really? So let's think about that. What, you know, what kind of, you know, what kind of classification is that ogre? Is it ogress, not realificus?
Yeah, that was so cute. Because I love the way Cosima didn't immediately go, oh, of course it's not an ogre, what are you talking about, type of a thing. Instead, she chooses to, like, use her science on it. And like, okay, I'm not necessarily saying that, of course, it's not an ogre because that would be stupid type of a thing, but more of if it was an ogre, what would the scientific classification be? And yeah. She's just so good with the kids. It's great.
Anyway, I'm going to be using that in the future. Ogreus, not Realificus. And then, you know, Cosima goes to talk to Mud and saying like, all right, you just got to tell me what is out there. And it's not a bear. And Bud's like, first of all, it is a bear. It's right. Like, and I'm like, it's just not going to fly.
Mud, no, you're a terrible liar. Stop this.
And that's when Cosima says, we're on the Isle of Dr. Moreau here. And whatever weird stuff is happening, it's coming from the big house. So now we're going to end up in the big house.
Yes.
Where Cosima sees Mud, trying to sneak. Well, she sees Mud go into what looks like an abandoned tunnel, and she follows her, and that leads right into the house. And when Cosima gets into the house, Mud is taking care of PT, right? And
some sort of infusion machine, which of course
has a lot of buttons.
I'm sure is how he stays young-ish.
Yeah.
It's very important. I find it interesting that Mud is the one that's doing that.
Yeah.
Says a lot about the trust that they have in her.
And there's a little bit of backstory also given, so Ira shows up. That's part of this episode, and Ira and Susan are reunited in creepy fashion. They're back to his mommy girlfriend, and Ira doesn't trust Westmoreland, which I like about him, you know.
Yes, but I think the reason that he doesn't trust Westmoreland is that he is concerned for his love relationship. He's jealous.
Yeah. He says that's nonsense. He's fossilized, Kathy. I think he's jealous.
However, something says you're worried because I'm sure he knows of the history, maybe not specifics of the history, but knows. And I, even though the whatever type of relationship they call it, what is it? Winter, summer, spring, winter, whatever.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. that season's relationship. I'm sure he's questioning his ability to be man enough just because she got hurt and that's why she left. But before that, she had left him too because he wasn't able to do what she needed him to do all of these things. And so he's questioning his
position,
in with her. Yeah.
But I also think he's protective of her, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And let's face it, Westmoreland seems like the least trustworthy character.
anyone will say, even Rachel will think that he is untrustworthy.
Yeah. he mentions how, years ago that Susan says, years ago, Westmoreland chose another path, another scientist who was willing to do what I wouldn't. So that's what leads into Cody. She's the other one. And when Cody is talking to Sarah and Siobhan, she talks about how she was recruited by PT and Susan, how they found their first subject before Kendall, but too many mistakes were made. And then at the same time, that's when Mud finds Cosima down in the basement of Dr. Westmoreland's house. And we're like, ooh, these things are tied together. And Sarah asks, who was he? And Cody's like, a child, a unique, beautiful child. Well, that's just, that's code name for Kira, too. Susan wanted to stop, but I've never been squeamish. So we've pushed forward and we we created a monster. And Susan never forgave me. I took Castor. She took Lita. I think somewhere where she says, I don't, oh, yes, yeah, she says how Susan never had the guts for the wet work. I was like, ooh, whatever that means, ooh.
Well, so in, like, what's it called? Like, assassin type roles, wet work is people that will do murder, death, that sort of cleanup. So that's what wet work is. So exactly the stuff that you... Ew is the exact reaction that I would expect you to have.
So, yeah. And Susan is saying to Ira, explaining to Ira that Cody is dangerous. I have to keep her away from Westmoreland. So Susan is the one responsible for Cody ending up in the institution and being drugged out of her mind.
Yes.
So take that, wet work.
Right. Well, I'm sure upon learning of the bomb, wherever, you know, on the Castor base, Westmoreland sent in his cleanup crew, and that involved cleaning up after Cody to make sure that they had all of the science picked up, as well as any remaining whatever. And that's when they found out that Susan was still alive, and so of course they're going to utilize her.
Cody,
however, she's considered a defector.
Who?
Cody.
Right, Cody. She's not a defector though. She's
But they, like, that was something that I, when Mrs. S and Sarah are in the room or in the building talking about, like, who they're going to go see, they say that she's a defector. She's a Neolution defector.
Oh, I see.
Who's, like, under a different name, so that she's not, like, found. So I wonder if Westmoreland is the one that put her under the, like, drugging, or if...
I think it was Susan. I think it was, like, Susan's, like, chance to get rid of her rival. And what we see at the end of that scene with Sarah and Cody is, you know, the security finally figures out what's going on. And
Dr. Nimitz comes in.
Dr. Nimitz, right.
And so they're like, we were supposed to meet with Nimitz. And he's like, I'm Nimitz. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, well, see ya.
And bye.
And Cody does a great, you know, trick of her own, which is, like, she pretends to go after Sarah. I mean, she doesn't have to pretend much, but she's like, she's throttling Sarah's neck, in the course of which she swipes Sarah's card. And so we haven't seen the end of Cody.
No.
They've made that pretty clear.
Yeah. They've set that up for an escape route, which is to be expected.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, definitely there's one other, you know, surprise, which is, you know, who's coming to Felix's apartment?
It's Adele,
his sister, his bio sister. And she is funny. Of course, she's like, as usual, you know, well, I was waiting here for a cocktail. And she's been recruited by S. She's been put in the know about all the clones. She's like, well, she shed a light on all those many sisters of yours. And it's like, your mama has a job for us. How do you feel about tracking global patents in Switzerland? To which Felix says, I hate fondue.
In this little bit, we learn why Adele was disbarred.
Yes.
And to the part where Felix, like, Adele asks if he knows why she was disbarred. And he's like, well, I assumed it has something to do with, you know, drinking and that sort of stuff. And it's like, well, actually, it was for embezzling. I'm really good at following the money, but not so much hiding or didn't write down the full quote, but, like, She just isn't as good as like covering it up.
Finding the money, you know, yes, but, you know, keeping the money, not so good.
Yes. And so it's pretty great that she's going to be involved, that she's part of Clone Club now and has skills that they need. So they can try and follow the money and see where it goes.
Yep.
And try and get rid of Neolution.
Yeah. And, you know, wraps up for them back at Mrs. S's house, where it's Sarah, Adele, Felix, and Mrs. S. And she's like, you know, thank you for helping us, Adele. Felix is like, what am I going to do? Like, what do I do? I love how she says, like, you're smart, you're a quick study, you can help your sister. There's six different subsidiaries of Neolution in Switzerland, you know, so you'll make yourself useful. And I thought that was pretty sweet because I, too, was kind of like, why would you bring Felix on some legal mission in Switzerland? He doesn't even like fondue. But, you know, S gives him a good pep talk. And she says, we do this as a family. So that and that family clearly includes Adele now as well.
Yes.
So that was nice. And the whole show is basically about moving the pieces on the board. It's taking a turn. You know, we've rolled the dice and now Kasim is inside the house with knowledge about the bear, the so-called bear. And we're, you know, we find out about Cody and we find out, you know, about Adele and Kira is, you know, hurting herself. So obviously we got to, this situation with Rachel, even if Rachel doesn't herself do the damage, is not good for Kira.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is all being set up for us. So it's one of those episodes where it's not an exciting episode. It's just a fun one. And the and it wraps up back in the home of P.T. Westmoreland. And Susan, now out of bed and dressed, and he offers her port so they can have a conversation, see if they're on the same page. And I like her line that says, you overvalue ruthlessness, PT. You always have. Rachel is too damaged for this. So Sarah's very, and then of course the great line, your corporate raised psychopath is finally paying dividends.
I loved that descriptor. Yeah. It was perfect.
But, you know, they make it clear that they have reached a point in the science where they're going to start exploiting Kira's anomaly, and we don't know what that involves. And Rachel will hold the reins, according to Westmoreland. So things are looking, well, it's setting up, you know, the two sides of the battle, the Siobhan family and the Westmoreland family. And it ends with that long shot of them sitting by the fireplace toasting to the future. It's almost like a painting. And that's the end.
Yeah. Well, and in that, Susan is going to get access to all of Rachel's information.
Yeah.
But Rachel is still in charge.
Yeah.
That I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And it'll be great to see how that works.
Yeah. So six more episodes. We have some, there's some real fun stuff in there coming up, but there's also obviously stressful things will have to happen in order for our clone sestras to get what they want. And we'll see what comes next. You still up for six more episodes, Kathy? Or are you done now?
Well, I've come this far. I guess I'll continue. And we hope you continue with us. Thank you for listening to this episode of SestraCast. You can find us online at SestraCast.com. We are on Twitter at SestraCast. Jean is at MacGenie and I am at Mrs. Soup. And we are part of the incredible Incomparable Network. And we hope you will check out some of the other shows over there as well. And thank you again so much. And we hope you have an amazing day.